All right, we're beginning here on the top of Zaditet Amud Aleph. We finished off yesterday with the stira that was brought to Rabbi Chanina and the Psukim as to the height of the Heichal, as to whether the height of the Heichal was 30 Amot or was 20 Amot. The answer that he gave them to reconcile that was the fact that it was all 30 Amot. So why does it say 20 Amot? Because it's 20 Amot above the wings of the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech, because the Kruvim that stood were 10 Amot high, and then above that was 20 Amot. Why would you phrase it, or why would you bring the pasuk to describe the area above the kuvim? That was the conclusion that the Gemara drew, which was kamash malan, the mata kamalo, that below the wings was no different than above the wings. Mala mala ein mishamesh klum, just like above them there was nothing there, so too below the wings there was nothing there. Or in essence, the aron and the gufa kuvim did not take up any space in the kodesh hakodeshim. As we discussed yesterday, that represents the idea of this spiritual centerpiece of the Mikdash, that it doesn't really exist in this world. It doesn't have real dimensions in this world. And therefore, when it's measured in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Kodesh HaKodeshim's dimensions do not include this item, and it's as if it's not there. And that's what we said, Misayale the Rabbi Levi. This helps Rabbi Levi. Dama Rabbi Levi, Vitema Rabbi Yochanan, Davar Zeh Misoret B'yadeinu. This is what we have passed down to us. Makom aron ukruvim ena min amida. The aron and the kruvim are not counted amongst the dimensions of the kodesh hakodeshim. It's as if they don't exist. Of course they're there. Of course they exist. But they don't exist, and that's the conceptually represents the idea that these are the most spiritual part of the Beit HaMikdash. It's where Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence rests. And I might even say that the concept in the beginning of the Mishnayot in Kelim, as to the Eser Kedushot, there are 10 levels of Kedusha, and the Mishnah enumerates, starting from Chutz Laaretz versus Eretz Yisrael, even within Eretz Yisrael, walled cities versus unwalled cities, then Yerushalayim versus other cities, so on and so forth, until the highest level of Kedusha, which is the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where the Aron is found. The reason being is that the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu was most apparent in that area. What makes it so apparent is that there's a continuous miracle that goes on over there. Continuous miracle is the fact that the Aron is present and yet takes up no space in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So the fact that there's an ever-present miracle that's taking place there is indicative of the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what is being represented over here by the idea that Enu Min Amida, that the Aron is not part of the dimensions of Kodesh HaKodeshim. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a Braita that supports that. Aron Shasa Moshe, Yeshlo Revach, Eser Amot, L'chol Ruach. The Aron that Moshe Rabbeinu made, which was placed into the Kodesh HaKodeshim of Shlomo HaMelech, that's described in the Haftorah that we read for Pikudei, with regards to the building of the Mikdash in Melachim Aleph, and bringing the Aron into the Mikdash, and that the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills the area. It says there that they brought in the Aron of Moshe to the building of Shlomo HaMelech. And there it says, the area of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, which we saw in the Pesukim from yesterday, is 20 Amot by 20 Amot. So now if you have the Aron in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and it says there's 10 Amot in each direction, then obviously that it takes up no space, because the whole building itself is only 20 by 20. So then how could you have the Aron sitting there and have 10 in each direction from the Aron? Elayim Kain, the Aron doesn't take up any space. Amar Rabbanai, Amar Shmuel, Kruvim b'neisen omdim. The Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech stood by miracle. Again, as we described yesterday, the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech were freestanding. The Kruvim of Moshe Rabbeinu won the kaporet, the cover of the Aron. The Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech are freestanding angels, we'll call them, that were in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and that's what we described before, that they were porsei knafayim, their wings extended out, and they were 10 amot off the ground. Moshe Rabbeinu's kruvim are sitting on the Aron, and Shlomo Melech's kruvim are porsei knafayim of their wings above what is there of the Aron and of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar, the posuk says in Melachim Aleph, v'chamesh amot knafa kruv achat, v'chamesh amot knafa kruv ashenit, that each one of the wings of the kruvim was 5 amot, Eser amot miksot knafav ve'atsot knafav. So it says that there's 10 amot from one end of the wing to the other end of the wing, so their wingspan is 10 amot, and each wing is 5 amot. Gufayu heichavu kaimi. Where is their guf? Now the Rashbam over here interestingly says that the question is not where is their body? Meaning that, where is the body relative to the wings? Because it says here, five amot, five amot. And then the wingspan from end to end is 10 amot. So, well, where's the body? How could it be 10 amot of wingspan? If each wing is five amot, then where's the body? You could have looked at the question that way. The Rashbam says that's not the question over here, because you could just say that when it means the 10 amot, it means the two wings together are the 10 amot, excluding the body. The question really arises from the fitting into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. If the Kodesh HaKodeshim is 20 amot by 20 amot, and you have two kruvim that are standing next to each other with their wingspan, if each wingspan is 10 amot, then you have 20 amot, which covers the whole span of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And then where's the guf HaKruvim? That's the question of the Gemara over here. Where does the guf of the Kruvim fit if they're standing next to each other? El Shmamina, Bnei Sayu Omdim. So they stood by miracle. Matkif lo Abaye. My Abaye says, why do you have to conclude that? The Dilma Botim Ketarnagulim Avukaime. Gemara's assumption until now was that the wings of the Kruvim were like the arms of a person. Just like the arms of the person extend from the side of the individual, the body sits between the two arms, so too the wings of the Kruvim, the body of the Kruv, would sit between the two wings, and that's what caused the problem. What Abaye points out is that you can have wings emanate from the back of the Kruvim, similar to what happens by a chicken. By a chicken, the two wings touch each other on the back of the chicken. If you ever lifted up a chicken, you can lift it by its wings, because the two wings meet on the top of the back of the chicken. The body of the chicken is not taking up any space between the wings. So you can have the same thing over here, which is the body of the kruv could take up no span of space between the wings, because the wings emanate from the back of the kruv. So that's a Abaye's suggestion. Matki florova, vodilma zeh, shelo keneged zeh, avu kaimeh. Who says that they were in a single line through the Kodesh HaKodeshim? Could be that they were standing non-parallel. And that means that they could have been shifted one forward, one back, and they could have stood next to each other. So that even though the Kruvim were parallel to each other, they weren't along the same line, and therefore one was shifted forward, one was shifted back. Therefore, you don't need the 20 mode exactly to go across, because they have some overlapping space where their wings are in the same area, one in front of the other, so they're not touching, but they are along the same parallel line, but not on that line itself. And therefore, you just have them skewed, one in front of the other, and then the wings would pass each other, but not be overlapping on each other. So that's how you could solve the problem. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says, Klomar, Demi Shalachiv, Aval Zesh Lokeneged Zesh, Sheknafav, Shalachar Ayulam Mala, Mikanfei Chavero, Kedei Sheimakom Negufin. That one wing was higher than the other wing, and that's how you solve the problem. So he doesn't change the fact that they're standing in a parallel line. He changes the fact that the wings are on a parallel plane, and that one wing was actually higher than the other. And in doing so, then you could fit both of them in a parallel line, because the wings are not on the same plane. Matkif lo Rav Acha bar Yaakov, v'dilma v'achsona avukaimei. You can see the picture in the Rashbam, but maybe they were on an angle. They were across the diagonal. Obviously, if you have a square that's 20 by 20 amot, if you put it on the diagonal, Pythagorean's theorem, then it's going to be bigger than 20 amot along the hypotenuse, and you'd have enough space to fit in the two kruvim with their wings and bodies, because you have extra space across that diagonal. Matkiv lo Ravuna b'reid Rav Yeshua, v'dilma beta mila'ai rovach. Maybe as the walls ascended, the area or the width of the Kodesh HaKodeshim expanded. So that's something that we saw yesterday, that when you have stone walls, you start with a much wider base, and then it narrows the wall as you rise. So here the wings are 10 amot off the ground. By the time you reach 10 amot of the height, which is a third of the height of the area, maybe already the walls have narrowed enough that it gives you extra space, and it's more than 20 amot of width across. Matkiv lo Rav Papa, Dilma Mikif Avukaifu Yadayu. Maybe the wings were bent. Who says that when you say that the wingspan means the extended wingspan? Could be that the wings are curved. Yes, they are each five amot, and it's 10 amot across, but then the wings are not fully extended. They are curved in a little bit, and therefore they now do not take up the full 20 amot when they're put side by side. Rabbi Matkifla Ravashi, Dilma Shalchufe Avi Mishalchufe. Or maybe they are, the way that the Rashbam brings from the Rabbeinu Hananel, Kanaf al Kanaf, Kadam Shalchuveket Yadav, their wings are overlapping, like when a person holds his hands or clasps his hands, that he crossed over his hands. So there's a concept or an idea that you can overlap each other. So they could be in the same line and yet be overlapping or have the wings sitting one on top of the other. Probably have to say that one wing was higher than the other wing so that one would go under the other one. But you can have it that way where they have some sort of overlapping wing. And then also here, the Rabbeinu Gershom says, V'dilma shal chufi avi mishalcha yideon, kanfeyem shebe'emtza haya knaf ze yotze lifnei knaf shel ze. V'yahu kitzata knafim ze keneged ze, mishukhim ze lifnei akaf shel ze, kishir sheyu gufam yecholim la'amot. So he explains, mishalcha avi mishalcha was that the wings were not on a parallel line, which is that the two kruvim stood next to each other. The amount of the body that it took up, or the space that the body took up, over there the wings were a little forward or a little backwards. So one wing was more forward than the other wing. Yeah, so they weren't exactly on a parallel line. The wings themselves were shifted, and that's how it worked. In essence, the Rabbeinu Gershom almost does the opposite when he describes Zesh Kano Keneged Zeh versus Mishalchei HaMishal Chufei. He almost gives the opposite explanation than that of the Rashbam. So here you have a number of suggestions as to how the kruvim could be standing there and the bodies be included in the measurement, and it would not be miraculous in any way. So that's the challenge that all these Amoraim are presenting to this statement of Rabbi Naya Mashmuel, that kruvim b'nei seinayim dim, that the kruvim were standing by a neis. They all have suggestions whereby you wouldn't have to have it by miracle or by neis, and therefore they are rejecting this idea that the kruvim were there b'neis. Now the interesting thing is that if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he points out that Abaye's suggestion, which happens to be probably the most likely suggestion or understanding of the pasuk, because the pasuk says that the wings are each 5 amot, 10 amot in span. So Abaye's explanation actually makes the most sense in that context, because you have 5 amot in each wing and 10 amot span, because they go from edge of wing to edge of wing is 10 amot. Rashbam gives an alternative way to read it as not being that it's literally 10 amot from end of span, but the two wings together are 10 amot, not including the body. But Rabbi's explanation solves that problem because he says the wings emanate from the back of the kruv. That means literally the wingspan is 10 amot. But the Balei Tosfot would say that even so, Bim Tamar, Akati Benesa Yomdim. Even with the Abaye's explanation, they should still be there by neis. Desrim besrim echeyotiv. You can never get something that's exactly 20 amot into a space that is 20 amot. The way that Abaye is describing over here, the wingspan of each kruv is 10 amot, sums to 20 amot, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim is 20 amot. How do you fit something that's exactly 20 amot into a space that's 20 amot? Yeshlamar, nikomam parech Abaye sheguf layomed b'neis. But Abaye is only saying that the body is not standing there in a miraculous manner, but it's true, there's still a miracle that it fit into the space, even though it was 20 amot and the space was 20 amot. For the other answers that are given here, where you've given extra space for the kruvim themselves, then you could solve both of these problems, because there's no longer an issue about just the wingspans together being 20 amot, because we've done something to shift the wings or the way that they're set up, and in that way, you've solved the problem, and you can solve the problem even of fitting into a space of 20 amot. All right, so now the question is, how did they stand? One of them said they stood face to face. One of them said that their faces were towards the bayit. It's not clear what that means, because the way that the Kodesh HaKodeshim is set up, the whole Mikdash faces westward. And so the Kodesh HaKodeshim is in the western end of the Mikdash, or the western end of the Eichal. So when you say Pneim El Abayit, does that mean that their faces are facing back towards the main area of the Beit HaMikdash, which is the eastern side? Or does it Pneim El Abayit mean it's literally facing into the Bayit, which means that they're facing inward towards the western side of the Kodesh HaKodeshim? It's not clear. We'll see in a second what the symbolism might be. Lamanda Amar Pnei Mishal Achiv. One who says they were facing each other. Aktiv. Pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, the Gabei, the Kruvim, Shlomo, Pneim Labayit. Their faces were towards the house. Like we described before, we're not sure which way that means. So he says, Lokasha, that's not a problem. That's when Bnei Israel are doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Kan bizman she'ein Yisrael osim ratzono shel makom. That's when they're not doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. So Pneim Ish El Achiv is when Bnei Israel are doing the right thing. Then the Kruvim represent the idea of the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Israel. And therefore they are facing each other. So when they face each other, that's an indication of Hashem's pleasure with Bnei Israel. And the fact that we have a face-to-face relationship. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not happy, then the Kruvims face not towards each other, but rather towards the Bayit. So why does that represent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not happy? Obviously, the fact that they're looking away from each other already is a bad indication. But towards the Bayit, if you say they're facing west, it's understandable, because when you face west, then they're facing in towards the Bayit, and someone who's approaching the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or someone who is in the eastern side of the Mikdash, the Kruvim are facing away from them, and that's indicative of the displeasure of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if they're facing out towards the eastern side, then when you're in the Mikdash and the Kodesh HaKodeshim entering, they're facing you. That almost looks like they are giving approval, or that they're facing you. So what you have to say is that when they're facing out towards the eastern side, they're facing towards the door. It's indicative of the fact that they may want to leave the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence wants to run away and leave the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And that's how that represents She'ein Osim Rotzono Shel Makom. Problem here is that the two psukim are not found about the same Kruvim. Which is that when you have the Pasuk of Pneim Ish El Achiv, that's about the Kruvim of Moshe that were on the Aron. When it says Pneim Me'abayit, it's talking about the Kruvim that Shlomo Melech put in there. So the Rashbam points out that really there is no stira. One's talking about the Kruvim of Moshe, and one's talking about the Kruvim of Shlomo Melech. But what the Rashbam indicates is that if the Kruvim of Moshe faced each other, there's no reason that Shlomo should have changed that. Right. So we would have assumed that they should have been Pneim Ish El Achiv. Why does it say Pneim Me'abayit? That's because, yes, they normally faced each other, but there were times where they didn't face each other. That's one opinion. The one who says that the pasuk that's koveya is the fact that they face the house. Haktiv, what are you going to do with the pasuk from Moshe Rabbeinu that says Pneim Ish El Achiv? They are on an angle. They are not exactly facing out. They're not exactly facing each other. They are turned. Titania, Unkulu Sager Amar Kruvim, Maasei Tzatzuim Hein, Umitsudadim Pneim Ketamira Niftar Mirabo. That the Kruvim are Maasei Tzatzuim, the way the Rashbam translates Tzatzuim over here, means from Tzatzea, young kids that we're talking about, and that the faces of the Kruvim were of those young children, and that's where the way the Gemara darshins it in Yoma, that the Kruvim is Kiravya. Kiravya means like young lad or a young individual. And so that's what it means over here, that the Kruvim asit satsuim heim, umitsudadim pneim kitamir and tabirabo. And their faces are set up in a manner by which they are departing from their Rebbe. So when you're walking away from your Rebbe, the child turns to face the Rebbe. They're walking forward, but they turn a little bit to face the Rebbe. So it's on an angle. You have it not all the way facing one way, not facing the other way, but somewhere in between the two. So that's what it means, matzudei atzudei, that they are both facing the Bayit, as well as facing each other. So they're on that angle, which allows them to accomplish both psukim, which is Pneim Ish El Achiv, upneihem the Abayit. Rashbam says, why doesn't he answer the same way the previous Amora answered? Which is, yeah, they normally were Pneim El Abayit, but when things were good, Pneim Ish El Achiv. The problem with that is that the Ikar setup over here is that they're facing the Bnayit. So why would you build the Kruvim in such a manner of indicative of a failure in the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Israel? Doesn't make sense that you would set them up as the primary way, and then, oh, when they're doing good, then they turn towards each other. You would set them up facing each other, and then when things were bad, they'd face away from each other. For that reason, they don't give that answer for this Amora, but rather they give the answer, mitzadadei atzdudei, that they are on an angle, but not facing each other directly. Okay, next Mishnah. Mi sheyesh lo bor lifnim mibeito shel chaveiro. Person who has a bor, he has a cistern inside someone else's house. We spent time earlier in the Masechta figuring out how you could have such a situation, whether it's brothers who split up an estate, whether it's someone who sold the house but not the bor and maintained themselves rights of access. whatever the origins of this setup, the setup now is that you have someone who owns a house, someone who owns the cistern inside the house, and he has access rights to get to the cistern. Nichnas, b'shtar shederach b'nei adam nichnasim. He can enter when people normally enter. Yotzei b'shtar shederach b'nei adam yotzim. And he exits when people normally exit, meaning that his access rights are limited to a certain amount of normalcy. He can't come in the middle of the night and wake the guy up and say, I want to get my water from the cistern. No, nor can he come at times when it makes no sense to come into this person's house. He has to come in when normal people enter and exit the houses, when there's normally traffic and people are awake. Veinu machnis be'emto u'mashkeh miboro. Can't drag his animal into this guy's house in order to have him drink by the cistern. Ela mimalei u'mashkeh bimachutz. He has to draw the water, take the water out, and then put it in the trough on the outside, let the animal drink on the outside. V'zeo selo potachat, v'zeo selo potachat. Both of them put locks on the boar. The person who owns the boar puts a lock on it. The person who owns the house puts a lock on it. So the Gemara's first question is, potachat leicha. Where are you putting a lock? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan shneim the boar. The way that I described the mission is that they both are putting the lock on the boar. You would have thought that the person who owned the boar was putting the lock on the boar. The person who owned the house was putting a lock on his door so the guy can't enter his house. That's what you would have assumed. Rabbi Yochanan says no, that both of them are putting a lock on the boar. So bishlama bala boar bailish demure maye debure. The person who owns the boar, the reason he locks it is so that when he's not in the house and he's not there drawing his water, the people who live there don't use the boar. They don't utilize the water that's inside the house. They have constant access to this boar. They could take water whenever they want. So he locks it to prevent them getting access to it. Alabalabayit lamale. Why does the balabayit lock the boar? What's the point of him locking the boar? Amalazar mishum chashad ishto. He's worried about questions about his wife, which is, if the individual has access to come in whenever he pleases, that means that he could come over both when the balabayit is home, as well as when the balabayit is not home. And the problem is that it could be that his wife is home, and he's not home, and then you start to arouse suspicions about something going on between this person who owns the boar, the cistern in the house, and the woman of the house, because he can come in at any time. Now, the chashad can be from two perspectives. It can be from the outside perspective, which is that people on the outside are going to be chosheid, admired, ayin, that they're going to think this guy is going in there, and the balabayit's wife is there alone, and people are going to start to spread rumors about that. Or it could be a literal chashad, which is that this individual now can claim he's in your house because he's going to get water from his boar, but he's really there to have an affair with the woman of the house. And you have no way of discerning whether he's really there to get the water or he's having an affair with the woman of the house. How do you prevent that? You put a lock on the boar, which means that the access to the boar is limited to the times that the balabayit is present. The only time you can go in there is when the balabayit's there to open up the lock on the boar. By doing that, you ensure that you don't have this problem, both from the chashad from the outside, because the balabayit's always home when this person shows up to take water. And number two, from the balabayit's perspective, this guy can't make a claim, oh, I was just coming to get water. What are you doing in my house? My wife's home. What are you doing in my house? I was going to get my water. No, you're not, because I have a lock on this. You can't get water unless I'm here. So now you know whether he's there for the real purpose of getting water. He can only do that when the balabayit's there. Can't do that when the balabayit's not home. Obviously, this only works if he doesn't give the key to his wife. If he gives the key to his wife, then you're back at square one. So if he's not there and he's going to give someone to represent him, then he has to have a third party that represents him and not his wife be the representative that opens up the boar, because then you're back to the same problem, which is this person can access the boar while the wife is home alone in the house. And there's no check and balance in terms of what he's doing in the house, whether he's there for the water or he's there for the woman. All right, next Mishnah. Mi sheishlo gina lifnim miginato shel chaveiro. Someone who has a captive garden that is internal to the person who owns the external garden. Nichnas b'sha shederach b'nei adam nichnasim v'yotze b'sha shederach b'nei adam yotzim. Again, you can only go in and out at normal times. You have to act like a normal human being. You can't show up at odd hours or at times where it doesn't make sense. Ve'eino machnis letochat tagrin. He's not allowed to bring in merchants or buyers into his property. V'lo yikanes mitocha l'setoch sadeh acheret. And you may not use it as a shortcut to get to another one of your fields. V'achitzon zorea t'derech. And the outer one is allowed to plant things on the path itself. So over here you have a number of rules that come up. The one of which is that, of course, this person only gives you access to the inner gina because he has to give you access to it. He's not giving this willingly because obviously it impedes his ability to plant that area or to utilize the outer garden. So he gave it to you either because of the way that the properties got split, that's the way the Rashbam says it, could go in your shim, ushutafim shichilku, whether it's your shim or shutafim that split up the property, and the outer property had to give a way in for the person on the inner property, and he gave him, or he had to give him a path right down the middle of his field. So now right down the middle of his field, it's not the most convenient place to have this path go. So first of all, he wants you to know that the only way you can use this is if you use it in a normal fashion. Normal fashion means you come and go at normal hours. The second thing is that you only use it to access the inner garden, not for any other purpose. If you're going to show your wares or your produce to your buyers, you take it out of here and show it to them. You don't bring them through my field, my gina, my garden to get to your garden. Number three is, when it comes to your ability to access your garden, that's the only rights you have here. You have an easement to walk through here to get to your garden. If beyond your garden there's another field that you can access from the other side, and this is more convenient because it's a shorter way, you can't do that. The right or the easement here is simply to get through this garden to get to your garden. If you're using it as a shortcut to get somewhere else, then we don't allow you to do it. That's not necessary. That's not what the path was made for. And then the last thing is that because he gave it reluctantly, he's allowed to plant it. He's allowed to put vegetation along this path. He can plant the whole field across. You have a right to walk on his vegetation or to walk through his wheat or whatever he's planted there. But nevertheless, he has a right to plant it and you have a right to walk there. So you're going to have competing rights there. You can exert your right to traverse the area. He'll exert his right of ownership in terms of planting there. And you have a right to walk there even when it's planted, but he has a right to plant it there even though you're walking there. So then that's how we solve this problem of somewhat of a reluctant giving you of a path through there. But the Mishnah says then, Natno lo derech min atzad, midat shnehem. If he gives him a path on the side of his garden with the acquiescence of both of them. So the way that the Rashbam writes it is that it's more likely to be midat shnehem, or less reluctant, because it's on the side of his field. Meaning that if you have a path down the middle of his field, then it's most likely that he did it reluctantly. He was compelled to do it. On the other hand, if he's giving you a path on the side of the field, it sounds like that he has more power here in order to force you to the side. And by forcing you to the side, he's more willing to do it in a manner that is generous in nature. And so that's the difference between the first case in the Mishnah and the latter case in the Mishnah, is how willing is this individual to give up the path that he is giving you. The Rashbam says it this way, Anan Sade, Demistama Machalo et Kol HaDerech LeGamrei. We believe, or we can see, that he must have been full-hearted in his gifting of this path. Yom Yuchada Chelicha V'lo Lizriya. To be used for walking and not for planting, or he's given real rights over here, more than simply the easement of walking, but real rights that you own that path and you can utilize that path. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom says it is, shared natnulo beitin, that this was done by beitin. So rather than a negotiated settlement, like the first case in the Mishnah, this case is an option that was imposed by beitin, and that's why it's a full gift or a full right that you're gaining. Therefore, all the rules of the first part of the Mishnah are not applicable in the second part of the Mishnah, which is Nichnas b'shashu rotzeh, yotzeh b'shashu rotzeh. He can go in and out as he pleases, whenever he wants. Umachnis l'tocha tagrin. He can take his buyers or the merchants through the path and go to his field. V'lo yikanes mitocha l'toch sadeh acheret. But he still may not use it as a shortcut to get to another field. Because yes, you own the rights, but the rights are for the access to that particular garden, not to use it as a shortcut to another place. Zeh v'zeh ein rishayim lizora. Neither of them have a right to plant that area. Now, the reason for one who owns that garden not planting there, we already explained. Because in this giving of a granting of the path, he does it in a much more generous fashion. either because it was an agreed upon settlement, or because it's from the side, or because Beit Din imposed it. Whatever the reason is, he's giving in a generous manner. He relinquishes full rights over here. The full rights are not only the easement of access, but also the rights to plant on there that he had in the ratio. As far as the other party, why he can't plant there, he owns the path now. And the path is his. So why can't he plant there and just walk on it if he wants to choose to get in there? So it's his path. He'll plant there and then walk on what he plants there. The answer is because if you let him plant there, he's going to try to avoid hurting himself and walking on his own plants. You know what he's going to do? He's going to walk on the other guy's plants to get through. So we're worried about the fact that if it's someone else's plants, we don't worry about you being, okay, stomping on them or walking across them. On the other hand, if it's your stuff, you're going to be much more careful not to walk on it, and that's going to cause you to deviate from the path and walk on the other person's property. So for that reason, we say neither of them can plant the path. The path has to remain as a path and an open path for use of access. Okay, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmo. Ama Beit HaShlachim. We're talking about a water channel that is used for watering the fields. That's how they brought water to the fields. They used these Amat HaMayim, which is the classic terminology for it. It's called Amat HaMayim because it is an Ama. We'll see in a second what that means. So now, if you have a waterway that he says, Ani Mocher Lecha, I'm selling to you. So you have a field, and he's selling you rights of a waterway through his field. I'm selling you the rights to put a water channel through my field, or I'm selling you the water channel through my field. That way you can water your field that's on the other side by bringing the water from the river through this water channel. It's from the spring through this water channel. So when he sells him a water channel, what's the definition of a water channel being sold? So the first way we'll explain it is, Noten lo bet amot l'tocha. He has a right to get two amot on the inside, Vamamikan, Vamamikan, Lagfei. And he has a right of an Amah on each side for the banks of the Amat HaMayim. An Amat HaMayim, or a channel, is only as good as the two walls that support the structure that allows the water to flow through. So any canal or any channel, you have the channel itself, but the banks or the sides are as important as the channel because they make or hold back whatever is on the outside so that it doesn't cave in or it doesn't ruin the channel. So what we're saying here is that he has a right to two amot inside the channel, which is that the channel, and the way the Rishbam explains it, is the channel is not an amah wide, but really, it may be an amah now, but you can expand it to two amot. That's a normal channel, because you need a lot of water to flow through. And then you get an amah on each bank to support your structure of the bank so it doesn't collapse. That's the way that we read it, and that's the way our Gemara reads, because there's a vav there. It says, Beit amot l'tocha. There's two amot on the inside, ve'amamikan, ve'amamikan. Separately, you get an amah on each side. On the other hand, there was a girsa that was brought. You can see that in the Balei Tosafot. He notes it, but the Rashbam quotes it in the name of Rav Yaakov Yekar, who's one of the Rebbeim of Rashi, that the other interpretation here, and obviously it would depend on this girsa, is, Noteno bet amot l'tocha, amamikan, amamikan. Instead of saying ve'amamikan, ve'amamikan, the amamikan, ve'amamikan is describing the two amot. So the channel is a given. The channel is an amat hamayim. So it's an amah wide by an amah high. So you know exactly what the channel size is. You don't need to tell me that. The chiddush here is that you get an amah on each side, you get the banks. That's what's being said over here, and that's the shtei amot. Shtei amot l'tocha means amah mikan of amah mikan. So according to that explanation, we understand that it's an amah tamayim. That's already self-defined as being an amah wide. And then the banks are what's the chiddush of the statement. According to the way that we first read it, and that's with the vav there, that is you get two amot on the inside and an amah on each bank, then why is it called Amat HaMayim? If it's two Amah wide, why is it called Amat HaMayim? The reason it's called Amat HaMayim is because it's an Amah. So the Balei Tosafot say, no, you didn't understand. It's not an Amah wide, it's an Amah tall, or an Amah deep. So that, yes, it's two Amot wide, but it's called an Amat HaMayim because the depth of the water channel is always an Amah. And that's where it got its name from, the Amat HaMayim. So those are the two ways to read this, and it will also influence the next statement of the Gemara. You could read it the same way. So now, Ama Beit HaKilon, so as the Rashbam describes over here, it is a water channel that has less water flow. The reason being that you're not using this channel to water the fields, but rather for other purposes, which he describes over here as Lashkot Be'imot, Rechitzat Begadim V'Kelim Hu. To feed the animals, to launder the clothing and your utensils. So the Rashbam's gear says Ama Beit HaSilon, which would be like a pipe. Like a silon, although he says there is an ikadamre kilon, which is the gifts that we have here. So it's a water channel that clearly does not need the volume of water for that you'd use for watering a field. And therefore the dimensions are going to be smaller than the Amah Beit HaShlachim. Some say that Amad Beit HaKilon, the Kilon is a bucket, and so it's an area where you draw water from, not an area where it brings the water and you use that to water the fields. So again, it still means or meanings that it's a much smaller area. Ani mocher lecha. He says, I'm selling you that. Yoteinu amachat letocha. You give one ama for the width of the channel itself. V'chatzi ama mikan, v'chatzi ama mikan, lagfei. And then you get a half ama on each side for the banks. So it's half the size of the ama beit hashlachim. Instead of being two amot wide, the channel is one ama wide. And the banks, you get a half ama each instead of one ama each. If you go to the Rebbe of Rashi, Rabbi Yaakov Yerkar, could say the same thing over here, and that's what the Rishbam says, that in this case, you would explain the same thing. If you take out the Vav, it would be Amah L'Tocha, Chatzi Amah Mikan, Chatzi Amah Mikan. So then again, it would be the Amah is a given in the middle. The question is, what do you get on the banks? And so then you have the Amat Amayim in the middle, but then you get a Chayef Amah on each side, again, because you don't need as much volume coming through this channel. So therefore, the banks don't need to be as strong or as wide because you're not going to go as deep in terms of the volume. Va'otan agafayim mizoram. Those banks, who has the right to plant them? Rehuda mar Shmuel balasadeh zoram. The owner of the field has a right to plant them. Rav Nachum mar Shmuel balasadeh notam. The owner of the field has a right to plant trees, but not to plant produce on the side. Manda mar zoran koshke notan. The one who says you can plant vegetation along there, you can plant grains along there, certainly you can plant trees along there. Manda mar notam. The one who says that you can plant trees, ava zoram lo. But to plant produce or vegetation along there, you can't. Chalchule mechalchule. Because it weakens the banks. As the Rashbam explains over here, machalchule machule is umechalchalin akarka milamala bisfato. It weakens the ground that is on the edge of the banks because they root immediately and they root spread all over the place and they cause a weakening of the embankment on the side and it's going to cause it to collapse into the channel. So that's the way he describes it. Now you say, okay, trees have roots and roots of the trees are going to do the exact same thing. And the truth is that the Gemara in other places tells us that you're not allowed to plant trees next to a cistern because the roots of the trees are going to go into the cistern. So we see that the roots are a menace of sorts, and that you do have to worry about your roots going into someone else's property. So there are different ways to answer that. One is to say that that's only true when you're talking about a bore, a cistern, which is much deeper. Trees root deep, they don't root on the surface. And therefore, if you put them up against the Amat HaMayim, they're not going to be a problem. An Amad of depth, the trees are going to root below the Amat HaMayim, and therefore it's not going to be an issue. On the other hand, when you're dealing with a bore, a cistern, which is extremely deep, over there you worry about the roots penetrating into the bore of the cistern. The other way to express it is to say, that's true by an Amat HaMayim. When you're talking about a large water flow area, there you can't plant trees right up against them. And the Gemara here is only addressing the Beit HaKilon, which is this lower water flow track or this piping system. And that's what it's addressing over here. So those are the two ways to differentiate why in one place we worry about trees being planted, the other place we don't worry about trees being planted. But the difference seems to stem from the fact that the trees over here will actually strengthen or actually solidify the bank that is on the side, whereas planting of other things, thinner roots that spread quickly and all over the place, will actually weaken the embankment and cause it to collapse into the Amat HaMayim. V'amar Rav Yehuda mar Shmuel, Amat HaMayim shikalu agfeha. If you have an Amat HaMayim where the embankment collapsed, or the banks collapsed, mitakna miota sadeh, he's allowed to take earth from that field and reset the banks. He has to now get something to make solidify the banks. He has to get dirt from somewhere, earth from somewhere to put there. He's allowed to take it out of the field. Biyadua shelo kalu agafeha ela ba'ota sadeh. Because where else did the bank go? I mean, that the dirt that's there got washed up or moved somewhere. Where did it go? It had to go into this field. So it's as if it's like a tit for a tat. You had your water channel here. The bank of the water channel collapsed. And now the dirt or earth is gone. Where was that earth deposited? In all likelihood, into the field in which the Amat HaMayim is found. Given that, then you should have a right to go get that earth back and rebuild the bank. Matkiv la rapapa, v'lei malei mayach ashpelu al arech. What are you talking about? Who says that the bank collapsed because it got pushed into the field? Let's say it collapsed inward into the water channel. So Rashbam says over here that mayach hashpalua, that your water overflowed in the water channel, and that would cause the destruction of the banks. It had nothing to do with the earth or dirt being washed up into my field. It's simply that the banks collapsed because your water was rushing through there and overflowed over the banks. Or the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom says it is, klomar lo naflu l'tok sadai, ki im mayim shecha mamash achlu akarka. The water running through there ate away at the banks. Vishpilu agidudim l'tok hamayim, and then they collapsed into the water itself. V'enecha misadai t'taken, and you have nothing for my fields. And if your water channel caused the problem, and it washed away the earth that's there, it's eroding the sides of the banks. So who says you have a right now to go into the field and take the earth or dirt back? You didn't contribute anything to the field. Why should you be able to take anything out of the field? El Omer of Papa, Shamanat Kain Kibel Alav Balasadeh. That is part and parcel of the understanding when you sell an Amat HaMayim. When you sell an Amat HaMayim, you have to know that when you sell in your field a water channel, that you're going to have to allow the person to fix the water channel out of your field. It is an assumed part of the sale, or it's a known part of the sale. People know that when you put a water channel here and it collapses, you can't get earth or dirt from somewhere else. You're not going to be trucking it into here. You're going to need to take it from the field. It's almost an explicit condition, even though it's not stated as part of this sale, is that you have a right to do that. And this is where the Rashbam brings up your issue, which is then, okay, if you have a right to take the earth from anywhere in his field, then what do you need the Amah on the bank and the Amah on the bank? You're going to get whatever you need. Let him do whatever he wants and always fix it. So over here, the Rashbam speaks about the balance that you have over here. Didn't he already give him an Amah for a bank on each side? So now why does he have an additional right beyond that to go into the field and take the earth out of the field? Because I'm like, oh, came into Kaluluhu, Taktan Adayin Mefer Sadeh. But since now they've been washed away or been ruined, he has a right now to use the earth from the field to fix them. Miu lahochi ahanilo. This is what helps him out. Mashnotei lemitchila amamikan v'amamikan lagafah. Why does it help that he defines the banks of the water channel as an aman each side? Dein lo lebalasadeh lasot sham shum tashmish shikalkela agafim. That's so that it limits the balasadeh to what he can do in that area of the banks. Elenitia ozria aval binyano kol davar shemachbid ein lo reshut lasot sham aval min amah lifnim yaseh betoch shelo mashi yirtzeh. The definition of the one amah is the perimeter at which the bala sadeh loses his right to do whatever he wants. He can only do things in that last amah that are up against the channel, things that support the bank and don't ruin the bank. That depends on whether you think that planting or trees or a zriya, whichever one of them you think is permitted, he's allowed to do. What he can't do is put up a building right up against your water channel, because that's going to put pressure on the bank or the side of the water channel, and it's going to cause it to collapse, or it's going to cause erosion much faster because there's no space to impact the border of the water channel. So what it's saying is that here you have a defined space of an amah, which says that the Baal HaSadeh beyond the amah has rights to do whatever he wants. So he can plant, he can build, he can do whatever he wants. That last amah that is right up against the channel, that is the water channel owner now, has a right of refusal to say you can't do something there because it's going to weaken the banks of the channel. But then the opposite side of that is that if the channel banks collapse, he has a right to go get the earth from the field. So here's this balance in ownership of this shared area, which is that I have some rights, you have some rights, and there's areas where those rights overlap. And that's the bank is where the rights overlap. And that's what we're trying to measure or balance is between the rights of each party here in this circumstance. All right, next Mishnah. Mishaita derech rabim over the tok sadeu. Someone has a public thoroughfare that goes through his field. Natla, he took it away. Natan le'em minatzad. He took away that route that's going through his property. And as an alternative, he gives them something on this side. So meantime, now he's going in the middle of his field. It's causing him a lot of problems. He can't plow his field in one shot. He has all these people walking through the middle of his field. He says, you know what? We're going to close up that access way in the middle of my field, and we're going to put it on the side of my field. Mash natan, natan. What he gave to them, the new route that he gave to them, is gone. B'shalo lo higiyo. And that what he tried to take away from them, he doesn't get. So meaning that it's almost like tmura. where you try to exchange the kedusha of an animal to another animal, not only are you successful at doing that, but you also, the original one stays kadosh. So do over here. You were successful at giving the new path. You're not successful at taking away the rights of the old path. Derech yachid, dalet amot. When it comes to a derech yachid, it's 4 amot wide. Over here, it seems to be that we're talking about a sale. That when you sell someone a derech yachid, this is the definition of selling them a derech yachid. You said you're going to sell them something that is 4 amot wide, which is the normal span or width of a wagon or shvarim that are going through there. So that's a derech yachid. Derech rabim, if you sell them a derech rabim, you mean shesh esrei amah. It means 16 amot, because that's the definition that's given in the Gemara in Shabbat to Derech Rabim or Shut Rabim, based on the wagons of the Mishkan. If you put two of them next to each other, the extended across or the width was 16 amot. Derech HaMelech Ein LaShiur. Talking about the way of the king, there is no limitation, there is no size to it. Now over here, you could argue that he's saying that he sold them a Derech HaMelech, and it's no different than the way that the rest of the Mishnah is speaking. The other possible explanation over here is Derech HaMelech Ein Lo Shiur is what we know today as eminent domain, is the right of the Melech to confiscate property for his need. The Rashbam says that's what it's speaking about here. B'nir Be'enai D'michtav D'vilti Rom Livavo Me'achav. That in the Parsha of Melech it says that he shouldn't become haughty and his heart should not rise above his brethren. Kadarish Gadleu Mishalechav. And from there, the Gemara darshins that you should prop him up or make him great from that which belongs to his brethren. Kid darshina nami va'koina gadol me'achav. The same thing that when it talks about the goin gadol, it says a goin gadol me'achav. And then the Gemara says, what happens if he's not gadol? Then gadleo me'achav, that you should make him rise or make him bigger through his friends. So that if he doesn't have the wealth, then you have his friends contribute towards that. The other Kohanim have to help the Kohen Gadol be the Gadol. And how do they do that? By contributing of their own property or their own money to him. Similarly over here, the king, Rashbam claims the drush over here is the Bilti Rom Livavo Me'achav. So he says over there that Me'achav has the same meaning. That you have to prop up the king with the monetary means of the people. And so that's the right of eminent domain that the king has. Now that right of eminent domain can only be exercised when the king needs it for his armies, or he needs it for a particular purpose. We're not talking about eminent domain over here because he wants to build a road, or he's buying your property and therefore he gets everything. No, it's a case where he's moving his armies through here, or he needs to do something that is of a national importance, then he has a right, and there's ein shiur, he can do whatever he wants. And then we have the rule of that derech hamelech, that melech poreitz geder, that the melech has a right to break down walls, to walk through things. He has no consideration for the monetary impact of what he does, because he has a right as the king to do this. Or you could explain it like the context of the remainder of the Mishnah, which is that it's a play of time. It's when a person sold a derech hamelech to someone else. What's the meaning of derech hamelech, or how do you define derech hamelech? That's what the Mishnah says, ein la shiur. Something that has no bounds to it. Obviously, that person wouldn't have a right to knock down walls or do other things and hurt other people's property, but at least in terms of the span of the roadway, ein la shiur. Derech hakever, ein la shiur. So once again over here, when you're talking about derech hakever, you can either be speaking about a case where the person is selling him a derech lakever, he's selling him a right of way to get to access to a burial area, or burial plot, or burial cave. That's one possible way to explain it. That's the second possibility that the Rashbam brings down, the one that he favors, is that you're selling him rights of access to a plot, or burial plot. The other possibility is that when you go to bury someone, and people have to walk through the fields, or have to access it, then you have the same rules as the melech, which is almost like there's an eminent domain. At the funeral, at the time of the vayo, we don't want to hurt the kavoda mate, and the more people that are there, the better. So we allow the people to walk over the edges of what is the normal way to walk and walk through the fields and damage whatever is there in order to get that. The Rashbam over here limits that and says that Derech HaKever will be different than the Ein LaShiur of Derech HaMelech. But Derech HaMelech, he really has a right to knock down walls, to do whatever he wants to walk through. That's not true by Derech HaKever. He says over here, Zelo Chamir K'Derech HaMelech Lifrotz Binyanin Lafsid Mamon Acherim. You don't have a right to knock down buildings and to cause losses to other people like the king does. The only right you have is to walk on whatever's planted in the fields, so you are causing him some loss, but not where you're taking down permanent buildings or permanent structures, you're allowed to walk through his fields, maybe damage the crops or whatever's there. The Rishbam favors the latter explanation, the one that we said before, which is that he's selling him a derech hakever, because why should people have rights to damage other people's properties just to get to a funeral? Unless those rights have been granted, why is private property all of a sudden in the public domain for people to go to a levaya? What you have to say is that the Chachamim gave people the right. The Chachamim, in a sense, did hefker beit din hefker, and they gave people the rights to do that. That's a much more invasive type of explanation. If you say that he sold him a derech lekever, then you know when people sell a derech lekever, you have to know that it comes with all these trappings, which means that people are going to walk all over your fields, and that there's no limit to the space if you're going to use your field to access or do the levaya, that they're going to walk all over your field. Ma'amad, when it comes to the ma'amad, which we'll see in the Gemara, Dayanei Tzipori Amru, Beit Arba'a Kabin. The Dayanim of Tzipori say that it's a space of Arba'a Kabin. The way that the Rishbam does the math for you, he says, is that the Chatzera Mishkan was 100 by 50, and that's a Beit Sa'atayim. So 100 by 50 is a Beit Sa'atayim. That means a Beit Sa'ah is 50 by 50. And over here you have Arba Kav. There's six Kav in a Sa'ah. And so now Arbat Kavim is two-thirds of that area. But the Rishbam recognizes the fact that you can't just multiply each side by two-thirds and you get the number, because we're talking about a square area. And so therefore the Rishbam gives you the math, which is either you have to say that it is 33 and a third by 50 amot, which it gives you the square area of what would be a arba kabin, or he does a square root for you and he says that it would be on an equal basis, then it would be 40 amot, 4 tfachim and gimel etzbaot, and a little more squared will give you that area of Arba Kabim. So he's trying to break it down into the components to get you the square area of what this Arba Kabim is. And again, we will explain in the Gemara what this Ma'amad and the Danei Tzipori is. So now the Gemara says, Amai, why shelo lo higyo? Why is it that he doesn't get back? Linkot Pizra, Veleitev, maybe he should take up a pitchfork and stand on the road. What it seems to be, and this is the way the Rishbam explains it, is that the Mishnah says over here, the problem is that this person can't enforce the trade. He has a trade here, which is that he gives up other property for the Derech HaRabim, and then he confiscates the original property of the Derech HaRabim. From the Mishnah, it sounds like it works. Meaning that, Mashanatan Natan, what you gave, but the problem is, the part that was there before, you can't take back. B'shalo lo higiyo, what he has doesn't come back. The way that the questioner is asking it is saying it sounds like it works. That the exchange itself was valid. The problem is enforcement of the trade. So yes, you gave away the new property that the Rabbim took and it works. On the other hand, when it comes to your property where you wanted to take back the piece to exchange it for, there you're unsuccessful at doing that because people are still walking through there. So Gemara says, why doesn't he just stand there with a pitchfork and stop people, take the law into your own hands, and block the people from going through that place where you've now exchanged? Don't allow them to go through the old route, tell them they have to go through the new route. Put up barbed wire, or whatever it is, why can't you take the law into your own hands? Gemara says, Shma mina, lo avid inish dina nafshe, afilu v'makom pseido. From here he would conclude, we do not condone vigilantism. Even when you're right, even when it's your right of your property, we don't allow you to go out on your own and defend your property. You have to go to Beit Din. Even when you're sustaining losses because of it, we don't allow you to take the law into your own hands. This is a major machloket in the Gemara in Baba Kama. There we saw a machloket about whether there is a concept of vigilantism in the halacha, and when do people have a right to take the law into their own hands. Gemara says, from our Mishnah, it makes it sound like you can't take in the law in your own hands. Afilu b'makom pseida. The Rishbam can't accept that as being the explanation of the Gemara, because the conclusion in the Gemara in Baba Kama is the Kuli Alma Savre Ovid Inish Dino Nafshe B'Malkum Dikab Pseida. When there is a loss, everybody agrees that you have a right to take the law into your own hands. When there is loss being caused and damage being caused, that you have a right to do that. So why over here all of a sudden the Gemara is trying to come to conclusion the opposite? And therefore the Rishbam says the Gemara is not reading this as a conclusive statement like we did, rather as a bitmiya. Shma mina, how could you conclude from this that lo avidin ish dinayin elan afshe afilu b'malkum pseida? Is it possible that a person can't take the law into his own hands when there is a loss over there? Or others take out the girsa b'malkum pseida in order not to be a problem for that Gemara in Baba Kama? and just say that the Gemara's conclusion over here is Shemina lo inish dina the nafshe, period, without adding in the additional phrase of makom pseida. But with the phrase in, the Rishbam feels that you have to say that it is derech bitmiya, in order that it's not a stira with the conclusion of the Gemara and Bava Kama, that everybody agrees there that you can take the law into your own hands. Because generally, we say that the machloket is when there is no pseida, or that it can be prevented. And you can see something along those lines in the Rabbeinu Gershom, which says, Klomar, ein adam rashay lasu din latzmo min acherim, afilu b'malkum sheish lo hefse, kamo kan, v'tiyufta d'man d'mukim b'baba kama, d'man d'itlei heicha, d'leka pseida, d'lo avidinish d'ina d'nafshe, afilu hochi modei, d'leicha d'ika pseida, k'kon hocha, d'darshin she b'sadeo, d'vaday avidinish d'ina d'nafshe. In essence, what he's saying is that this will be a question on that conclusion in the Gemara in Baba Kama. The fact that the Gemara over here is saying that you can't take the law into your own hands, bimakom pseida, will undermine the conclusion of the Gemara there that says kuleyama. Everybody agrees when there's a makom pseida that you can take the law into your own hands. Our Gemara would say otherwise. And that means that the person who says you can't take the law into your own hands, that's even bimakom pseida. So that's why the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it as being an undermining of that conclusion of the Gemara in Baba Kama, rather than the way that the Rishbam deals with saying, the conclusion of the Gemara and Baba Kama is steadfast. Now, the question here is not a question on that, but rather a question on how can we read the Gemara this way? How can we read this Mishnah this way? Because then it would disagree with that conclusion in the Gemara and Baba Kama. Amar Rav Zvid, Mishmei Derava, Gezeira, Shemi Yitein Lehem Derech Akalaton. No, you misunderstood. This is a Takanat Gezeirat Chachamim. He does not have a right to take back the Derech HaRabim that went through the middle of his property because he gave them someone on the side, because we're afraid that he's not going to make it an even trade. The trade is going to be, yeah, I'm giving you a new route, and here's the old route, but he's not really going to give them a route that is as straight or is as good as the route that he's taken away. And so we're afraid that he definitely has a personal interest in cheating out the Rabim. And the problem is that the Rabim are not going to be able to defend themselves because you have a diffusion of responsibility. That's what the Rishbam says. And so every person is going to think that the other person is going to be taking care of it, and they're never going to come around to dealing with the issue, and therefore he's going to be successful at trading the roots and actually giving the Rabbim a worse trade for that which they're giving up. And they won't be able to come and take him to court because nobody is going to be bothered. Every person is going to say, oh, the other guy will do it, and then it'll never get done. But Mishai Shemei Rav Amar, Benotein Lehem Derech HaKalaton. It's a case where he gives them a worse route through the property. So here you have a nafkamina between them is whether, if he does give them a better route or a straighter path through there, does it work? According to Rav Zvid, it doesn't work because we're always worried about it. It's gzeira shema. According to Rav Misharshia, it's only when he actually gives them something that is problematic. If he doesn't give them something problematic, he would be successful at it and there would be no gzeira. Rav Ashi says what you were suggesting. Kol min atzad derech hakalaton hi. You can't have a situation in which you don't hurt some parties. When you have a derech rabin that goes through your field, it's closer for some people, further away for other people. If you move that path, if you move that derech rabin to another location, then for some people it'll be beneficial, for other people it'll be detrimental. Because people coming from one side now have to walk further to get there, people coming from the other side have to walk less. So by definition, anytime you exchange one route for the other route, it's going to hurt some parties and benefit other parties. And therefore, we never let you trade. We never let you do this because of the fact that you're going to hurt parties out there, and we don't want you doing that. As the Rosh from notes over here, that there's no nafkamina lalocha between Rav Ashi's reasoning and Rav Zvid's reasoning. Lekamide ele chiluk tamim. It's just a difference in the reasoning behind it, but you'll come to the same conclusion whether you follow Rav Ashi's position or you follow Rav Zvid's position, which is that we're never going to allow you to make the exchange. The reason for that is different, but the outcome is the same. The Gemara is now going to ask, okay, if it fails because of that problem, then why can't he say to them, listen, it didn't work, you take yours back, and I'll take mine back. Why does the Rabbim now get access to both of them? Why does the Rabbim get access to the old route and to the new route? If it fails, just say to him, listen, the old route's staying in place. You don't get the new route. If it didn't work to trade, I don't want it to work. Why does he lose his rights when he gives them the new route versus the old route, which they get to keep? My question is, just go back to the original situation. He wasn't successful, so just go back to the way it was beforehand. Why does the Rabbim now get the right to both roots instead of it just simply being go back to what it was before he tried to make this trade? So that's going to be the discussion in the Gemara on tomorrow's Zamud as to why he loses rights over here. Not only does he not successful, but he also loses rights over here. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Kuf Amud Aleph.